It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is overcast and 40 degrees. Out at the airport, they are showing southeast winds at 17 miles per hour, and they continue to have 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for rain for the rest of the day and tonight and tomorrow, too. East winds to 15 for today and tonight, turning to the northeast tomorrow. But starting on Sunday, look for mostly sunny skies for Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, even partly sunny skies on Wednesday. Coming up on the Midday Report, the Kodiak Area Marine Science Symposium is a wrap. We get some highlights. And the Tustamina will be delayed. Details on that coming up. And the Alaska House of Representatives has approved a proposal to ban children under 14 from creating social media accounts. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Amy Held. At former President Donald Trump's criminal trial in New York, a former tabloid chief has wrapped up 4 days of testimony. David Pecker describes suppressing negative stories to protect then-candidate Trump. Prosecutors say Trump falsified business records as part of a scheme to cover up payments to women claiming affairs before the 2016 election. Trump's former assistant, Rona Graff, was called to the stand. President Biden says he'd be willing to debate Trump, his again presumptive Republican opponent. NPR's Asma Khalid reports the president spoke to Sirius XM radio host Howard Stern.
Debates have long been a feature of presidential campaigns, but it has not been clear what the candidates would do this year. Stern asked Biden directly.
I don't know if you're going to debate your opponent.
I am somewhere. I don't know when. Yeah. I'm happy to debate him.
Trump responded on his social media site, Truth Social, saying he's willing anywhere, anytime, any place, and suggested Biden meet him at the courthouse in New York City tonight to debate. Trump did not participate in any GOP primary debates this cycle. Earlier this month, a number of news outlets, including NPR, issued an open letter urging the campaigns to participate in debates. Asma Khalid, NPR News, The White House.
Arizona's attorney general has announced 4 additional people indicted in the fake elector case. The newly named defendants are Boris Epstein, Christina Bobb, Jenna Ellis, and Michael Roman. All 4 worked for the Trump campaign in 2020. More pro-Palestinian protests are fanning out across U.S. campuses, inspired by the ongoing encampment at Columbia University in New York. Demonstrators chanted at George Washington University in Washington. Some Jewish students have said they feel targeted for their religion. Hundreds of protesters have been arrested this week. Many demonstrations have been peaceful. In Gaza, a baby girl born via C-section after her mother was killed in an Israeli airstrike has herself died. NPR's Aya Batraoui reports.
The baby girl survived the airstrike that killed her mother, Sabrina Al-Sakani, her father, Shukri Judah, and 3-year-old sister Malak, Arabic for angel. Doctors had scrambled to save her, rushing her to a hospital to be placed in an incubator. Dr. Mohammed Salama, who heads the neonatal department at the hospital in Rafah where the infant was being cared for, told NPR the baby girl died Thursday. A relative also confirmed it in a post online, sharing a photo of the beaming parents with their child before the airstrike, next to a photo of relatives holding the infant in a white shroud before her burial. Israeli airstrikes killed more than 30 people this past weekend in Rafah, where Israel's military says it's planning an assault. Israel says Hamas militants operate in Rafah, but has not responded to NPR requests on why this home, among others, were targeted. Aya Batraoui, NPR News, with reporting by Anas Baba in Rafah.
It's NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT News, I'm Terry Haynes. The Alaska Marine Highway System announced on Wednesday that the Tustamina Ferry will be delayed coming out of its annual maintenance. That means the earliest it will sail to Kodiak Island is the evening of May 9th, when it's scheduled to stop in Port Lyons and Yuzinki as well as Kodiak. Originally, it was expected to be back in service by the end of this month. The Marine Highway System's director, Craig Tornga, told the public during a Zoom meeting this week that the Tusty, along with other ferries, is spending a lot of time in the shipyard this season.
Found a lot of steel wastage in several areas on the Tustamina. The struts, strut supports, cracks and pitting on the leading edge of the rudders, wastage in the coolant boxes, a lot of repairs to the turntable on the car deck.
Tornga says the department has the money to cover the extra repairs, but additional steel work on multiple ferries, including the Tustamina, was not originally in the budget. Separately, a different sailing schedule for this year's Crab Fest over Memorial Day weekend has been announced. The Tusty will no longer stop in Port Lyons or Yuzinki ahead of that event, as originally scheduled, and instead it will go straight from Homer to Kodiak and back. But to accommodate the surplus of ferrygoers sailing during Crab Fest, there will be an extra run from Homer to Kodiak over the weekend. That's according to local staff at the Kodiak Ferry Terminal. Meanwhile, the Tustamina Replacement Vessel, or TRV, project has funding to move forward to build a new hybrid-powered ferry by 2027, which would officially retire the 60-year-old Tusty. Sam Dapsevich, a spokesperson for the Alaska Marine Highway System, says the project has yet to go out to bid, and the total cost of the project is unknown at this time, although he estimates the final price could top $300 million. The fifth Kodiak Area Marine Science Symposium was held this week. The conference brings together scientists from around the archipelago and Alaska every 3 years to present their research. The event started on Tuesday and wrapped up Thursday night with films about coastal life. This year's symposium was organized by Alaska Sea Grant, which funds scientific research in coastal and marine resources. Julie Matwiyu is the Marine Advisory Program agent in Kodiak.
We've organized a number of presentations, about 2 full days of plenary talks, and a number of evening activities.
Presentations included climate change's effects on fisheries, monitoring invasive species like crayfish and green crabs, ocean acidification, tours of the research vessel Oscar Dyson, and even evaluations of mariculture. This year's keynote speaker was Rick Toman, a climate specialist with the Alaska Center for Climate Assessment and Policy.
We can compare what's happening in Kodiak Island area, to the larger part of our state.
Toman says that Kodiak is not facing the same drastic warming as the Arctic, but extreme weather events like the 2018 blob in the North Pacific Ocean will become more normal in the next half century. Toman also shared the history of recording climate data in Kodiak going back to the 1870s and a preview of the island's potential future climate with graphs showing a general warming trend. The Alaska House of Representatives on Wednesday approved a proposal that would ban children under 14 from creating a social media account. The measure came as an amendment to an otherwise unrelated bill that would require adult websites to verify users are 18 or older. And as Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports, it received significant bipartisan support.
Anchorage Democratic Representative Andrew Gray says inspiration for the social media measure comes from an unlikely source, a conservative Republican governor thousands of miles away.
This amendment is based almost verbatim on a bill signed into law last month in Florida, drafted by Governor Ron DeSantis.
Verbatim might be a stretch. The 20-page Florida bill came to the Alaska House as a 3-page amendment, but the concept is the same. The amendment would ban kids under 14 from creating accounts on social media platforms. 14 and 15-year-olds would need written parental consent to create an account, and people under 14 would have their existing accounts deleted. Gray says it's aimed at keeping kids safe.
According to the U.S. Surgeon General, nearly 40% of children 8 to 12 years old and 95% of children 13 to 17 years old use social media apps. Teens who spend more than 3 hours a day on social media double their risk of depression and anxiety.
And his colleagues agreed. The Alaska House of Representatives approved the amendment in a late-night 27-11 bipartisan vote. Some of the youngest House lawmakers, though, were split. 28-year-old Representative Genevieve Mina, an Anchorage Democrat, recalled encountering troubling content on the bizarro image board 4chan as young as 10 years old. She spoke in support of limiting kids' social media use.
I don't usually say that I'm an expert on anything, but I feel like I'm an expert on being a girl on the internet. I've lived this, right? And I think there's a really important nuance in this conversation when we're talking about social media and the role that it plays in young women and young girls and the impacts on mental health.
But Alaska's youngest city lawmaker spoke out against the ban. 26-year-old Representative C.J. McCormick, a Democrat from Bethel, recalled how social media helped him keep in touch with family and also played a key role in pressuring rap star Kendrick Lamar into following through on a promise to visit Bethel. That's after students won a college prep contest.
The reward was Kendrick Lamar was supposed to be our principal for the day. Unfortunately, Kendrick Lamar didn't want to come out to Alaska, so all he got was a Skype call.
That is, until some Bethel kids got on Twitter and started making a ruckus. Kendrick Lamar eventually showed up, along with NBA star James Harden. McCormick says the episode says something about the power of social media to affect change in the world.
So I'm not here to talk about, oh yeah, we got celebrities, you know, we need social media, but rather it was an incredibly powerful opportunity for kids from a rural district to really participate on a national level.
Also opposing the bill was Wasilla Republican Representative David Eastman. He raised free speech concerns. He said he was concerned the limits on social media were so broadly written that large swaths of the internet could be off limits. Federal judges have blocked similar laws targeting children's use of social media in Arkansas and Ohio. Others speaking against the bill said they were concerned the social media limits hadn't been studied closely enough by lawmakers. Here's Homer Republican Representative Sarah Vance. She's the sponsor of the underlying age verification bill.
The idea may be merited, but the details of the bill have great importance. And we're not here to pass ideas, we're here to pass good laws.
But many of her colleagues rebuffed Vance's request for more time. The amendment passed with significant bipartisan support. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
Following a harsh winter, the village of Shishmaref is emerging from a fuel crisis. Deliveries of fuel by plane have begun as the sea ice slowly begins to melt. KNOM's Ben Townsend reports.
The remote village of Shishmaref is facing a severe fuel shortage due to unforeseen legal and logistical complications impacting essential services and the daily lives of its residents. The crisis began in August of 2022 following the sudden death of a manager of a local privately owned general store. This froze access to ordering critical supplies and fuel through the business. As officials looked ahead to the winter months, it became apparent that the available supply of gasoline and diesel simply wouldn't be enough. The village, located on an island inaccessible by barge in the winter due to sea ice, is highly dependent on fuel for heating, transportation, and powering essential facilities like schools and health clinics. Stella Havitone, president of the Native Village of Shishmaref Tribal Council, coordinated a multi-organizational effort to respond to the situation. She said, quote, "We've been in constant discussion trying to navigate this crisis. We've involved local businesses, the city council, and native corporations to explore all possible solutions," end quote. The village reached out to the state of Alaska to declare an emergency, but were declined, according to Havitone, because they were not in a natural disaster situation. Due to the shortage, the village imposed a limit of 30 gallons per person per day to ensure equitable distribution amongst residents. As supplies dwindled, emergency measures were taken, including flying in fuel, which is significantly more expensive than deliveries by barge. Making matters worse, this past winter was unusually cold, driving up demand for the costly resource. The village managed to secure emergency deliveries of diesel, but the cost remains a pressing concern, with estimates reaching as high as $24 per gallon. The village has already ordered 24,000 gallons of diesel, delivered 4,000 gallons at a time. The fuel is transported through a hose that runs about a quarter mile from a bladder located inside a delivery plane to fuel tanks in town. The logistical challenges were compounded by the need for special permits and adherence to hazardous material regulations for the flown-in fuel. In addition to the immediate fuel issues, the village is also planning for long-term solutions, including additional fuel storage and exploring more sustainable energy options. Havitone said, quote, "We need to ensure that this doesn't happen again. Our focus is on securing our energy needs and protecting our community's health and safety," end quote. The crisis only added to concerns about the broader environmental and infrastructure issues facing Shishmaref, like shoreline erosion. As the village navigates these challenges, the spirit of community and cooperation remains strong. Havitone said, quote, "Despite the difficulties, everyone, from elders to local businesses, have come together to ensure we manage through this crisis," end quote. Reporting for KNOM, this is Ben Townsend.
The city of King Cove is worried about the future after its seafood processor announced earlier this month that it will cease operations. The plant, formerly owned by Peter Pan Seafood Company, is the economic engine of the community on the Alaska Peninsula. And while a new owner will eventually take over the processing plant, it's unclear when the facility will reopen. Alaska Public Media's Ava White spoke with Kirsten Dobroth. She reports on Alaska Fisheries for Undercurrent News, a commercial fishing and seafood industry trade magazine. She's been following this story and reporting on what it means just ahead of the salmon season.
Hey, Kirsten.
Hi, Ava.
So why is this plant closing, at least for now?
The seafood industry has been struggling with this historic slump in wholesale and dockside prices. Back in December, Trident Seafoods announced it would sell four of its shoreside processing plants in Alaska because of this market situation. At the time, that was kind of a bombshell that got a lot of attention outside the industry. And within a few weeks of that announcement, Peter Pan Seafood Company also said it would temporarily close its facility in King Cove for winter. That's noteworthy for a number of reasons. It's the company's biggest plant. It processes a number of species year-round. But at the time, Peter Pan said it would reopen for the summer salmon season.
And now it sounds like that's not happening.
Yeah, right. It was pretty widely reported as time went on that Peter Pan was in some serious financial trouble. And then fast forward to just a few weeks ago, it comes out that Silver Bay Seafoods, which is also a major processor in the state, will take over all four of Peter Pan's plants as part of this major restructuring plan that's still being finalized. Silver Bay says in the announcement that it will operate all the Peter Pan plants for the summer, except for King Cove. Meanwhile, Peter Pan really wasn't saying anything about what it planned to do with King Cove, but there were some signs that things weren't looking good. For instance, some fishermen I spoke with were already signing on with other buyers for summer, and then about 2 weeks ago, the company posted on Facebook that the plant would stay closed and encouraged people to apply to Silver Bay for work. And since then, Silver Bay has also confirmed, at least for now, it doesn't have plans to open the facility.
Okay, so a lot has happened. Why is this Peter Pan news such a big deal in this whole picture?
Yeah, there are a few things that are notable about this announcement between Silver Bay and Peter Pan. One is that it's a major deal between two of the state's biggest and more recognizable shoreside processors. And one is effectively ending operations altogether less than 2 months before the start of the salmon season, which is the peak time for most processors and fishermen. Another noteworthy point on the Peter Pan side of this is that the current owners only bought the company back in 2021. One of the financial backers of that sale was McKinley Capital Management, which was using money from the Permanent Fund Corporation's in-state investment program at the time. I don't know what the implications of that are, but I think when you look at how quickly this company is halting operations, it's really indicative of how quickly things have changed for one of the state's biggest industries.
Okay, so going back to King Cove, what does this mean for that community?
Yeah, the implications for the city of King Cove are huge. I've talked to city officials there pretty frequently since early this year, and this is a big financial hit for them. More than half of King Cove's general fund budget comes from fish landing taxes, and I think the ambiguous timeline for reopening has people there worried. Some hurdles to reopening, though, are deferred maintenance at the facility that needs to be addressed. Silver Bay, so far, has also said it's prioritizing absorbing as much of Peter Pan's fleet as possible. possible, including in King Cove and up in Bristol Bay, where Silver Bay will now operate two processing plants because of this Peter Pan deal. So that will likely eat up some of the company's more immediate expenses. But keeping King Cove closed will have a regional impact, too. Fishermen outside the local fleet have historically delivered to the King Cove plant, depending on the species and price point at any given point. So I think there's a lot of people that are anxiously awaiting word on when things will be back up and running.
Lots to unpack, and I'm sure that's something that we'll be watching as salmon season gets underway. Thanks so much for your time, Kirsten.
Thanks for having me.
Around 100 people, many wearing red, flooded the sidewalks of Petersburg's downtown on Wednesday. They were marching in support of increased state funding for education. Bipartisan education legislation that would have increased the state's per-student funding by $680 per student was vetoed by Governor Mike Dunleavy last month, a veto override failed by one vote. An operating budget with $175 million in one-time education funding has passed the House and seems to have support in the Senate. The one-time funding is equivalent to a $680 per student increase. Dunleavy can line-item veto some or all of that funding. Petersburg's protest event was part of a statewide day of action organized by the Alaska branch of the National Education Association, a union of more than 10,000 public education employees statewide. People in more than a dozen other communities around Alaska participated in protest events, all of which took place outside of school hours so that student learning would not be disrupted. KFSK's Hannah Floor caught up with the downtown crowd and shares this audio postcard.
I'm Eleanor. I'm here because I've seen the problems that not having enough funding causes, and I don't want that to be our future. We lose our really, like, our elective programs. We lose a lot of the things that make our school special. We lose more advanced classes, and all of these are really important to creating our school culture and giving back to our community. And we can't do that if we don't have enough funding.
I'm Sue Paulson, and I'm in support of keeping the basic student allowance at the state of Alaska higher than it is today. It's been flat for so long, we can't afford to pay the teachers.
What's wrong with all the states? The borough is great!
You don't have any kids in the school system. You're not a teacher. Why does this matter to you?
Well, I would like to have our town be full of educated people, and I want for the kids. You know, the governor and the legislature let the kids down this year. They should be ashamed, and they should be immediately rushing to their computers and typing in that larger number and passing it out this year.
Education!
My name is Joe Willis, and my beautiful wife is an educator. All of our kids have went through the school system. We still have one that's got 4 years left, and there's been no change in funding since our child that has been out of school for a couple of years was just going into junior high.
I'm Cindy Lagadakis. I'm here because I support education, and I support Petersburg schools. We're having hiring challenges. We have maintenance issues we need to deal with. We have more complexity in dealing with students. Life is more complex than it was when I was a student, and there are more things that need to be taught in a more complicated way, and we can't do that without funding.
I'm Elsa Winterstein, normally known as Mrs. Winterstein, and I teach high school English and drama. I think that, you know, the school, the district, the borough, we're all on the same page when it comes to funding for our kids, because, I mean, what makes our children better makes Petersburg better and gives us a stronger future here in the state. So I think it's a no-brainer to be supporting raising of the base student allocation.
My name is Cora, and I'm in first grade.
And will you tell me what your sign says?
We will
Remember
in
November.
We will remember in November.
What's wrong with our state? The borough is great. What's wrong with our state?
People in Petersburg, Alaska, marching in support of increased state funding for education.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Friday. It is the 26th day of April, the year 2024. The sun rose today at 6:28. It'll set again at 9:47, giving us 15 hours and 19 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 4 minutes and 45 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 62 degrees, set in 1936, and our record low was 23, set in 1955, then again in 1967. Currently 40 degrees, overcast skies, southeast winds at 17 at the airport, where they are also reporting 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for rain for the rest of the day, tonight and tomorrow too, but on Sunday, mostly sunny skies, Monday and Tuesday as well. Mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. Small craft advisory through tonight. East winds to 25 knots this afternoon with seas to 6 feet. East 30 tonight, should come down to 20 knots after midnight with 7-foot seas tonight. Northeast 20 tomorrow with 6-foot seas. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory through tomorrow. East winds to 25 knots, becoming east 30 tonight. 6-foot seas, building to 7 feet tonight in the Shelikof. And for tomorrow, northeast 25, seas to 6 feet.
Where would you go? A pro baseball game? A Rolling Stones concert? A Broadway show? The lucky winner of KMXT's travel raffle will get to choose from 3 different packages that include a hotel stay, tickets to a concert, show, or game, and $1,100 of cold hard cash for your trip. Only 300 tickets were printed. Contact a KMXT board member or stop by the station at 620 Egan Way to pick up your tickets today. Tickets are $40 each, 2 for $75 or 3 for $100.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day. Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.
Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the April 26th edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. Although it remains on the cool and wet side, spring does appear to be springing here on the island, finally. Some things go on no matter how cool or wet it may be. The eagles are on their nests, and the ravens have gone quiet, meaning they are on their nests, too. In the meantime, the little birds are sure making their presence known. My neighborhood has been full of the happy chirping and tweeting of the crossbills as they flit from treetop to treetop. And Thursday night, I heard the distinctive sound of a varied thrush from my yard. The salmonberry buds are getting bigger. Beach rye has been popping out for a while now. And I spotted some pushke coming up for the first time this spring, as well as some wild geranium plants and one brave fireweed sprout. And of course, the bears are out and about, too. Moms with cubs of the year are typically still up high this time of year, but juveniles and adults are emerging. It's time to pay a little bit more attention to your surroundings when you're out walking the trails and beaches. Make some noise on the trails and have some bear spray handy just in case. The gray whale migration is also underway, and Kodiak Audubon Society is hosting 2 hikes to look for gray whales this Saturday and Sunday. Meet the hike leaders at the Passagshack State Park restrooms at 10:30 a.m. on either day. Make sure you dress warmly, wear rubber boots, bring water, and a lunch. and probably some rain gear. Don't forget your binoculars. You'll want those not only for spotting whales, but also to see the migrating ducks and shorebirds as you drive to and from Passaic Shack. And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.